Listening to Great Speckled Bird, featuring Doug Dietrich on pedal steel. Good morning, it's Steve Todd, and I want to thank you for tuning in to Musicians FAQ on 102.7 CKMS. This is part 3 of Doug Dietrich's musical story. Parts 1 and 2 covered Doug's childhood years and being introduced to pedal steel, playing in too many bands to mention. I think Doug recalled 55 bands over his many decades of performing, his friendship with the Weber family in Maryhill's Commercial Tavern, in his efforts to make the Barn Dance the success that it is to this day. So today's show will dig into studio work, playing in tribute acts, expanding into gospel country, and the never-ending support from his wife that has allowed him to pursue his musical career for so many years. So let's catch up with Doug as he discusses the Barn Dance Museum. And you mentioned earlier you actually have a little museum as well in yes. William?
Yeah, unfortunately, That museum is closing down now. We had it in a couple different locations, and for the last roughly 10 years, I'll say, hard to remember exact, it's been in the North Huron Museum basement. There's a town hall theater in Wingham, And right across the street was this, I think it was municipal offices at one time, but they had the North Huron Museum there on the main floor and the upstairs floor, and we were able to rent the downstairs. But unfortunately, that building has been, I don't know if it condemned is the right word, but it needed extensive renovations to be brought up to code, so they had to close it down, basically. So things like I had my steel in there, I brought that home. Hoppy?
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
There was a showcase there of Hoppy. Had a Western shirt, boots, picture with his horse. I just, through Diane Dittner, returned that stuff to the family. Like we're trying to distribute the stuff out again because it's closing down. There wasn't a large demand. You know, again, it's demographics. And it's like, I use the example, Roy Rogers Museum had to close. Why? Well, people don't know Roy Rogers. Ask kids now.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know who Roy Rogers is. So the demand is waning for a museum.
Yep.
And the barn dance is similar. Most of our shows you can emcee, you'll say, who's been to a barn dance before? And you see lots of hands raised. But the hands are getting fewer
that's a shame,
and fewer. So I don't think there's demand.
Okay.
If we had 25 people come through the museum in a year, it's maybe all.
Oh, really? Okay. So I understand then. That makes sense.
And we can't afford to go buy a building or pay too much rent and staff it. Like we can't do it. So
now you mentioned, so you started right around when you're 10 to 12, and is it your father or
dad and Gord Affel built some guitars.
And did they make them? So your very first steel was a homemade steel. Is that
yes.
Right? And is that the one that was in the museum?
Yes, it was.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I played it for a few years and then I ended up buying a Showbud guitar through Gord Affel too. They made mine and Gord made his own at that time. Dad supplied a lot of the mechanical parts with him. Gord was a cabinet finisher. He did beautiful cherry wood finish on mine.
Yeah, so between a woodworker and a tool and die maker, could make a pretty nice looking instrument.
And Gord played steel, so he knew. And there was old record albums, Pete Drake albums, with a picture of a Showbud steel. They were looking at that. And,
you're kidding.
You know, it's funny.
Yeah. Okay.
But castings like this, tuning heads and that, I've got the wooden patterns, and they wound their own pickups back then.
Okay, yeah.
Gord rigged a little machine that would spin this around and wrap number 10,000 wire, I think it was, around the pickup magnets. And I still got two extra ones that were supposed to go in another guitar, but Dad never built another one for me. That became somewhat extinct because back then they didn't have the universal type setups where you could say, instead of this first pedal raising the third string, I want it to do something else. So now on my current guitars or new ones, you can switch that around pretty easy. Where mine was, I use the word hard-coded,
I was going to say hard-wired.
It was just a series of pulleys and stuff underneath. And it just wasn't flexible enough to do raise and lower a string on two or three different pedals where they now could. So I ended up going commercial. So I had a couple Showbuds. Then I got into Carter Steels, and you can see two of them in the room here. I bought them through Al Briscoe, who runs Steel Guitar of Canada. So this was a 98 and this was a 2008.
Okay.
Every 10 years I need
to. No, that's neat. Yeah.
Al was a great friend and he was the distributor in Canada for Carter and he sold a lot of guitars for them. And he worked at their steel guitar booth in St. Louis. It was an international steel guitar convention. Went for like 40 years. It's only died a few years ago. And he used to work for Carter there. And through him I got involved with working there too. I did about 4 or 5 years working there, and it set up a booth. The hard work was lugging everything in, taking it out.
Okay.
At a big hotel, you know, and it's downstairs and that.
And that must be, I can't even imagine being in a steel guitar convention because obviously everybody plays steel.
Yeah.
And all the people you'd meet would be unbelievable then.
Oh, it was phenomenal. And they had big names, like they had Buddy Emmons, Lloyd Green, those are some of the icons on steel guitar, and they were there playing on the main stage. But we would set up a booth, and we'd have like three guitars sitting there with an amp facing back to the people. Or you could put headphones on if you wanted to. And then they had a guy that used to sort of work for the company all the time. Like I only did them one main show where he traveled with them for other shows. Billy Phelps was his name. And he had a lot of pre-recorded stuff, backing track. And he would play along and sort of attract people to the booth too. But you could sit down and play to those tracks along with him, and he'd just say, your turn, and we'd pass it down the line.
Okay,
so
great.
I'd sit there and play sometimes, or if he wasn't working, like he couldn't play all the time because the booth was open all day and night.
Yeah.
And so I'd sit there and play a little bit. But yeah, it's all steel players walking around, and a lot of them were in at the main stage. If Buddy Emmons was there, they were going to go to the main stage.
Yeah,
they weren't
going
to come and sit at our booth. The goal was to try to sell guitars. And that was not an easy task, but we had a couple good years there too.
We're going to hear a song recorded at J. Reel's studio. This is Why I'm Walkin', recorded by John and Geneva Heeman. On this track, Steve Patico is on guitar, Don Reed's on fiddle, Steve O'Connor is on piano, Steve Hogg on bass, Doug Dietrich on steel, and J. Reel on drums. After this song, Doug talks about J. Reel performing at the St. Louis Pedal Steel Convention.
I've got my angel on my mind, that's why I'm walking. There's such an ache in this old heart, Lord, I ain't talking. The little hand that held my tight just waved goodbye tonight. I've got her sweet love on my mind, that's why I'm walking. And with an old love on your mind, life's not worth living. I breathe her name with every breath I'm breathing. Why could I never see how much she meant to me? I've got her sweet love on my mind, that's why I'm walking. Misspeaking, could you blame it on this memory I'm keeping? Should I have my head bowed low, hear my songs and you'll know I've got your sweet love on my mind, that's why I'm walking. I've got an angel on my mind, that's why I'm walking.
And it was great meeting people. I still on Facebook sort of message once in a while to somebody in Germany who I met. Yeah, and it was good. And we saw all the great players. It was a big event. And Dolly Parton, we saw her there because her steel player, and he became her business manager, was put in the Hall of Fame for steel. John Huey, who was Conway Twitty's and Vince Gill's steel player.
Yeah, I was just going to mention Vince Gill, yeah.
And Look at Us was the famous steel break. And I don't know if you know J. Reel or not.
Yeah, through the Thorn and Roses.
Yes, that's his group.
But... yeah, but he's been mentioned as well as his uncle, I believe, in Rostock. Like that, I guess their family originally came
from
Rostock.
His father, probably Royce.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and,
his father.
Yeah, so their names have popped up many times. But
yeah. So one year behind the scenes, you don't know Jay well enough to know how he sings. He can sound like Vince Gill that wouldn't know the difference.
Okay.
So it was arranged that he would go up on stage with John Huey and do Look at Us. He was going to sing it.
Really?
John agreed to it, but he had never heard him. But he agreed to it, and it was great. A real special moment.
This is in St. Louis?
In St. Louis.
Wow,
he went up on the main stage when John Huey was there, and he sang Look at Us. It just blew John away because he sounds just like Vince.
Yeah, there's some South Mountain stuff like that. I think they're doing some Vince Gill stuff.
Yeah, he could be.
Yeah,
he played with South Mountain for a long time.
Yeah.
And I've filled in a couple times with
that
group, too.
Okay.
And played on recording sessions at Jay's studio with South Mountain. Guys like Steve Patico, Donnie Reed, phenomenal musicians.
Yeah.
A bunch of recordings I can show you were those guys, too.
Okay.
Which, like I said, with Hollywood, too, I'm just honored to play with some of those. They're legendary in my mind and, have been full-time musicians. I've never done it full-time, but I've still had quite a bit of time committed
Absolutely.
To it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Jay is a very interesting, very talented guy.
Oh, yeah.
Barbara Mandrell was there 1 year because her steel player went into the Hall of Fame. So it was quite the happening place. Yeah.
What I like about Jay, too, is I think he's actually playing, one of his hands is doing the bass. Like, he's somehow playing the drums with, I guess, one hand.
Yeah.
And then playing the bass notes with a little, he must have a little piano, short little piano.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I don't know how he does it.
And then singing, too. Yeah,
sings harmony. And,
yeah, unbelievable.
And joking around, too.
Yeah, so good for him.
I did a job with them at the Listville Fair last year with Thorn and Roses. Jana wasn't able to make it, and she's the main singer. So it was just Jay, and he sings a lot too, and the fiddle player Katie, and then they hired myself to play steel and Randy Satchel.
Oh, really? Okay.
Too. So we did an afternoon at the Listville Fair, and that was fun.
I wish I could have been there for that.
Just thrown together. So many things are just thrown together with no rehearsal, but it's fun. That's what I really enjoy. And Jay is a real pro and knows recording and knows so much about the business. Yeah. He'd be an interesting guy for you to interview.
I should.
I'd recommend that.
I always like to find out the generation or the two generations back to hear the history. Like, this is great to...
Yeah, Royce, good musician. He played little steel. He played bass, lead guitar. He had a band, Country Cousins, that won some band competitions years ago. It was Wayne Reel was on fiddle, Alan Reel, all Reel family pretty much. And they had a great band. Royce, I met him over the years playing. That's how I got to know Jay, too, his father. But and Trevor, Jay's brother, I've had him on the Barn Dance show. He's a good singer, too.
Really? Okay, that's neat.
Yeah, the Reel family is all Reel musical.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. You're going to be hearing Randy Satchel with It's My Life, recorded with the help of Doug Dietrich in the South Mountain Band, as well as Steve O'Connor. After the song, Doug is recalling his many studio sessions with recording artists.
I'm looking for a card to remind you of the way I feel inside. All these tears that keep running down my face take me back to a better place in time when you were mine. When you were mine. I've known I should have known it might have been you that would cast the very first stone and wished I knew where I'd gone wrong so I can carry on with my for a heart to replace one that you tore apart. All this pain that keeps running through my brain won't let me live the way I want to live now with you gone. Now with you I've known so I can carry
Hi friends, Kevy Canuck here from Kitchener, Ontario, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS RadioWaterloo.ca.
I've never been in the first call scene where, you know, there's records you're going to hear on the radio and that, but I've done a fair amount over the years, probably 25 different CDs
really?
Okay. Artists I've worked with.
Yep.
Randy Satchel was one I did two albums, and Jay Reel was on the board there, or on the drums and on the board.
Yep. Okay.
Some of those stuff that Randy wrote, probably half the material on his two CDs.
Okay.
He'd written it. Very good stuff. Played with Randy a lot over the years too. Bill Murray did a CD. Again, Jay Reel was recording it, right in Bill's house actually.
Yep.
But he has the equipment to do that.
Mostly comfortable in your own house, so.
Yeah, and Odd Song for Larry Mercy, young girl that. I had, when she was about 9 years old, also on the barn dance, Allie Walker. I just went to Brantford, a studio there, Randy Sulsky's studio. Never met him before and didn't know what the material was. Just went there and I recorded Steel on her album.
Really?
A couple songs. At 9 or 10 years old, she really does quite a job.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And again, that's the barn dance contact.
Yeah, for sure.
I knew her one way and she said, well, I'm doing this recording. Could you play Steel?
And that's tough too because you're... You might get there in, I don't know, maybe mid-morning or something like that, and all of a sudden you're recording a couple hours later or something, right?
And a lot of times when they do Steel, it's adding Steel. So it's a lot of stuff is committed. The intro, they want you to do the intro, and it's a 1-5-1-1 intro, whether you'd like to do it differently or not. Sometimes you have to be pretty creative. And sometimes it's frustrating. Sometimes it's, wow, that worked really good.
Yeah, you know? And do they, so you're probably not even told what to do. Like, do they just... Or they might give you a kind of a theme or something. But
yeah, sometimes they'll give a little guidance, and it depends who's on the board. Like there, the singer was not there. It was only myself and the recording engineer, and I think he was, so to speak, producing the album. But we sat in studio right in with the board and that. And he said, you don't have to go out there. Just sit right in front of the console here. So we're just talking this close.
Okay, really.
And it was great. But it worked out well. He was... a musician on the album too, and he was able to give guidance.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, Bill Simmermaker was another one. You know, again through the barn dance, I met him. Allie Walker. There's all kinds.
Yeah, good for you though.
And some different style too, like the one that Al Whitmire asked me to play his album, but then he also asked me to play with Pam Brooks. It was a bluegrass album basically, but she did some country bluegrass and won a Steel on it. So that was kind of neat.
Yeah, for sure.
It's different. And I did. You've probably heard the name Cheryl Lescom, a blues singer. I did a CD of hers too. Wasn't very much Steel on it, but I did, probably 4 or 5 songs. Just got a call. That was through Paul Weber, I think I got. Yeah, it was interesting. And it's fun. You go into the studio not knowing what to expect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not rehearse. Sometimes you know the songs you're going to do. Sometimes you have no clue.
Yeah.
And when they're originals, like Randy Satchel's first album, it's, I think, 10 songs and 9 were his originals. And 1 was the song that Larry Mercy wrote. So they'd never been recorded before, so it's putting it all together. But we had, you know, Paul Chapman was playing guitar then, and Steve O'Connor on keyboards. All talented, good studio musicians. I was the least experienced studio musician of all of them. And that's often happened in my case. I've been lucky to work with some good people. Yeah. So I often think if I had done it, committed to it full time, I could be, I would say I play at this level, maybe I could play somewhere up higher, but I don't know.
Yeah, you got to pay
the
bills.
I've been thankful for what I've done. Yeah,
no, and you have a house and your career and everything else too, other than music. So
yeah, like Paul Weber's. Yeah, you got a pension too.
Yeah. So no, it's good. You have sort of the best of everything. And
years ago, you could make a living at it. I had chances, but just wasn't ready to travel. And I was happy with the local groups that I was playing with. but now to make a living, it is tough. Yeah, I feel so sorry for the ones, especially with the pandemic, who were doing reasonably good, but then bang, some of them teach besides, and even the teaching was curtailed for a while.
Yeah, there's people that just do weddings, and they just play at churches and stuff, and even that's all, everything's stopped, right?
So it's sad, but it's the reality of the situation.
Here's a recording that Doug was just talking about. This is Ali Walker with Dear Diary. Alan Jackson and Hank Williams, like some of the tribute.
I'll mention Alan Jackson. Yep. I haven't played that too often, but Rick Jones does this Alan Jackson tribute show and more recently combines it with George Jones also.
That's neat.
He looks like Alan Jackson, but he can sound a whole lot like George Jones if he wants to. Really, he exaggerates George a little bit sometimes, you know, for the effect, but he can really sing. And he loves the slow ballads, either for Alan Jackson or George Jones. But I filled in. Doug Johnson did a lot of the work for Rick, and they're close buddies, but I would get the call when Doug couldn't make it. He was doing, for the most part, Alan Jackson tribute with a few George Jones show. But when you play with Rick, you get to see the countryside, you travel. Okay. There was one weekend we went from left on a Friday, stopped someplace on the way to northern Quebec and had lunch, I guess, Sudbury probably area with Donnie Reed, but he wasn't on the job. We were just meeting him. And we went to way up north, northern Quebec, played a Saturday night show there, then stayed over, left Sunday morning, drove to Minnesota. This was Labor Day weekend, so it was a Monday holiday.
Now how long of a drive would it be from northern Quebec to Minnesota?
Oh, God, it was long.
And you guys were in a little van or something like that?
Yeah, in a van. I can't remember. Yeah. I mean, we drove all day.
And yeah, all the equipment's in this van, too, and everything?
Well, not PA and stuff, just our instruments, because the venue had the PA and that. And we were going to a casino in Minnesota someplace for Labor Day afternoon show. So we got there late Sunday night. I roomed with Grant Haywood. We went to the casino for a little bit, lost a little money, donated to the U.S. economy. And then played the show the next day. We opened for the Bellamy Brothers.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
And then stayed Monday. And I remember calling in from work early Tuesday morning saying, I won't be in work today, which I had told him before, but I just checked with somebody if things were okay. And said, we're driving home. And we drove all day. That was like 20-some hours to come home.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
So Rick was great to play with, like Alan Jackson and Steel, you know, great stuff.
Where is he? Is he based out of this area, or where is Rick?
He was around this area at that time.
Okay.
He's moved up to Halliburton area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He still does the show somewhat, not as much. Again, you know, things kind of go in cycles, and Alan Jackson tribute was hot for a while, and you know, it's can you make a living at it or not, and he was driving truck for a while and stuff too, so... But it's very tough. But he has a good core group of guys. When he gets a book, and he can put on a good show still. And he does a very good job.
Good. Good for you.
But the other tribute-type show that I got into, and we call it a theatrical tribute in this case, a guy by the name of Joe Matheson had done, when he lived out west, a show called based on Hank Williams. It was called The Show Hank Never Gave. I don't know if you ever heard of that, but there was a gentleman named Sneezy Waters that did that play. I remember going to see that when I was young with my dad. And it was just a story about Hank Williams, you know, traveling and doing, you know, performances. And Joe did this when he was out west, and somebody said to him, you're really good at that. If you want to write another Hank Williams play, I'll help fund it in that. So he ended up writing this Hank Williams Live 1952, which was set in sort of September of 52, where Hank had been kind of down and out. He was kicked off the Opry and he was drinking and stuff. But he was making his comeback, and he was going to record a new album in the next couple weeks. But this was a show he was going to do at the Kalijah Cafe just to rehearse the band and get back in the swing of things again.
Yeah.
And so some of this is real, but the whole way he pieced together and wrote this thing is Joe's own. But Joe actually went to Nashville, recorded a Hank Williams album, a tribute album, with all the top players, and Paul Franklin, who was a steel player on that one, premier steel player, he said, if you're researching and doing this play, you should go and meet Don Helms, who was the original Hank Williams steel player. Everything, you know, You're Cheating Heart, all those cold heart, that was all Don Helms playing steel.
Okay.
And I met him, Don Helms,
when
he was, I don't know, in his 80s probably.
Yeah.
At St. Louis Steel Guitar Convention.
Okay, that must have been a real treat.
Yeah. And so Joe actually spent time, 1 or 2 days, getting all those real stories. And you can tell in the show, it's amazing, the story. And I was able to go back the next year to St. Louis and see Don Helms. And I said, do you remember talking to a guy who was writing Hank Williams' play? I said, Joe. And as I explained more, he went, oh, yeah, I remember him. And I said, well, I'm playing you in that show now. Which was
amazing.
A neat thing. And that was the last time I saw him, because he died that same year.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
But Joe, anyway, wrote this play and toured out west with it a bit, but then he was moving to Ontario. His wife was a well-known actress, too, and singer, Louise Petrie.
Okay.
She has Broadway performance and everything.
Yeah.
And Joe is a professional actor, too. I think when we were talking earlier, I mentioned he was in Jersey Boys for a couple of years, the run in Toronto. But anyway, when he came to Ontario, he needed a band. And at that time, Shane Guzzi gave him my name. It worked out that I started playing with him. And it was interesting because I talked to him, and he sent a CD of the songs, and he wanted to rehearse at Guitar Player's Place in Toronto. And the first night they were rehearsing was my wedding anniversary, and I had booked tickets. Oh. I think it was for Phantom of the Opera. My wife loves that, and we went to that. And I said, if time allows, maybe I'll try to stop in. But I never was able to. So they had that rehearsal. And then a week later, on a Monday, they had another rehearsal, and I made it to that one. We went Wednesday and started Belleville area, I forget where it was first, but down east of here anyway, someplace, and played two shows on the Wednesday. So
you only had one rehearsal?
One rehearsal with him. I'd only known the one guy, never met Joe or the guitar player and bass player and drummer before. It worked out pretty good. Yeah. But I was like audience member there because I knew the songs, but I didn't know what was happening between all the cues and that. He told me some cues when he wants me to come in, when he says a certain line. But it was fascinating. It was like I was sitting there watching it. Oh, I got to play now.
Oh, yeah,
but
for sure.
Because he had these stories, and he just, because he's an actor, he can put so much into it. And he has the full nudie type suit, really? And that he looks the part. Has the motions and the vocals down well, and just the way he blended stories. Yeah.
Luckily
amazing.
For you, though, you've had all these years of barn dance experience and then all these other bands, so you're...
I had
it's almost like you have a head start a little bit anyway.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah. Although it tends to be some of the same Hank Williams songs that people do. Some of the... We had 22 songs in the show, so it was, some I had to learn.
Yeah.
And we had to learn them the way he wants to do it.
For sure.
But I had the CD from Nashville that he recorded, and I think he also gave me a CD of one of the live performances, nothing with the banter and talking between just the songs. So I knew what to expect, kind of. And it worked out. But as we did more, it got really tight. And it was fun. There again, we traveled out east for a couple tours, west up to the Yukon.
Yeah, wow, that'd be
great
nice.
Experience. Yeah. We played some at Maryhill. In fact, Maryhill, we did two shows the 1 year, afternoon and evening, and sold them out both pretty quickly. And we had two cameramen there, and we made DVDs. Joe wanted to do it there because you can picture the stage.
Yeah, aerial, it's already set up, yeah.
And we said, Paul has another stage to give you more room you can set up front because he kind of dances around too. And Joe said, no, I want to be behind those rails. I want it to look really authentic like Hank would have done it. And so we made DVDs, and that's what he used in the promo.
Okay.
And there's some YouTubes you can look up.
Yeah,
Hank Williams Live 1952 and see them.
And this started 2007, so when you did this for a couple of years then? Or?
Yeah, well, more than that. We didn't do it this year, naturally, and it didn't do anything last year in 2019. So 2018 out west was the last we did, I guess.
Well, it's nice, though.
We'd like to do it again, but Joe, as an actor, he might be in New York or he might be in Montreal.
Okay.
Or he gets these commitments long-term, so he can't fit these things in.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to turn something down that might be a six-month run theater for a one-night show type thing, it's hard.
Yeah, you mentioned Jersey Boys. And I think you said before, the Jersey Boys cast all showed up, actually, for one of you.
Yeah, a lot of the cast members showed up on Sunday night when we did it at that same theater in North York. I forget what the theater was called. We did it at their Sunday night and a Monday night then for a general audience.
He's probably quick on his toes, too. I bet he could add in the Jersey Boy names and make them part of the show.
No, he's a professional actor, and it shows. He wrote a play. He and his wife were the only ones in it, along with the piano player. Will You Wait For Me, I believe it was called. It was a war story where somebody was going off to war, and Will You Wait For Me met this woman. And there were songs they composed, and he danced and stuff. And I just went, that's the most talented couple I know.
Just
amazing
neat.
What
Good
they do. We might do it again, but the last time we talked, he was a little concerned. When Hank died, he was 29 years old only, which would have been amazing to see what he would have done in music had he lived longer. And Joe is, been doing this for a long time, and he's worried now that he's getting too old to be believable as Hank Williams. But I really personally don't think that's a problem. I mean, he's fairly young-looking, mid-50s or whatever he is, not to give his age away. Sorry, Joe. But with the hat and the costume and the way he acts on stage,
sure.
I don't think anybody ever thinks of that. He's been busy with other things
until
this year.
Yeah.
But you can't say, oh, now I'll do Hank Williams instead. So.
Yeah.
Elijah was a wooden Indian standing by the door. He fell in love with an Indian man over in the antique store. Elijah, he stood there but never let it show, so she could never answer yes. Sunday feathers are held at Tommy Hawk. The mate wore her Pigeon braids and hoped someday he'd talk. Just stood there but never showed a sign, because his heart was made of naughty pine. Oh, Elijah, he never got a kiss. Oh, Elijah, he don't know what he missed. Oh, is he any wonder that it fits his wrist? Elijah, that poor old wooden head. Set on the Indian maid with the coal black hat. Elijah just stood there but never let it show, so she could never answer yes or no. And then one day a wealthy customer bought the Indian maid, the girl so far away, but old Elijah stayed. Stands there, lonesome as can be, and wishes he was still an old pine tree. Oh, Elijah, he never got a kiss. Oh, Elijah, he don't know what it meant. Is he any wonder that his face is red? Elijah, that poor old wooden head.
One, it's a little different from all the other things we were doing over the years. It was again in the late 90s, 98, 99, I believe. Alcohol and Drug Recovery Association sponsored us as a gospel group. A gentleman by the name of Jeff Wilby was sort of championing the cause, and they wanted to promote the use of music instead of, you know, people getting high on alcohol or drug problems. They were trying to fight this, and they wanted to raise money for these programs. So he had the idea of putting a group together, and he called it High on Gospel versus getting high on alcohol or, or drugs. So we put a group together, mostly friends, musicians around. It was interesting, though, because the lady who was sort of the featured singer with the group, her name was Betty Beer. And people thought, well, that's a fictitious name, a character they made up because of the alcohol and drug recovery. But no, Betty Beer was her name. Betty Van Roy is her name now. She's married since. But that was our lead singer, Betty Beer. Al Alderson played bass, and he did a lot of vocals. Doug McNaughton, a fiddle player from Stratford, he was on fiddle. And Trevor Teed, a drummer from Stratford at that time, he played drums, and I played steel.
So is this, again, traditional country-type music? Or
country gospel. It was all mostly gospel songs. We did a lot of traditional gospel things. You know, I Saw the Light Even and stuff like that. And then one song that I wrote, He'll Be Beside You, we did that one. And Betty wrote three or four that we were doing in the show. So we were trying to promote our own music too, but trying to raise money for this. So over a couple of years, we did shows mostly in churches. But it never really caught on that we were doing major things, but it was a different type of music.
Yeah, and that's right.
It was nicely accepted. It was country enough that most of the traditional country people came for it too. But it was nice in these churches, and you know, sound in the churches was fun.
For sure. Just so, it expands what you're doing too, because you're breaking away from what you would normally play.
And you know, from that we got into tribute shows or stuff like this, but this gospel was unique. It was another area of development, so to speak, that I really enjoyed.
I still don't have any clue how you have, how you had that much time to do all these different bands, because you would have been in this, in the Sunrise band. You said this was...
Yes, late. It was Sunrise. It was pre-barn dance, so I wasn't doing that yet.
But still working full-time and doing all these things, so...
Yeah.
Good for you.
But you got to love it.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
And that's where the good friends make it a lot easier to do,
too. Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned people like Al Alderson, so you're already playing with people that you're familiar with and everything like that.
Sure,
so.
And he would have been in Sunrise Band at that time yet, too.
So it all kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Good.
Keep coming back to each other.
Yeah.
We had a reunion of the band, so to speak, on the Blythe Gospel Show on a Sunday morning a couple of years ago.
Oh, that'd
just,
be
we hadn't done it since the late 90s.
Yeah.
And we did it, I'll say, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So I was throwing that together again.
Yeah, that's always neat, too. I've done that before, getting together with guys years later, and you can't remember how the songs go. And
we did Teach Your Children. I remember that,
Oh,
too.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I used to sing those echo parts and the steel.
Yeah.
It was just different stuff. It was fun.
You mentioned this Hollyrood house band.
Oh, yes. Yeah, again, where I'm lucky to play with some very good musicians and guest performers. It's a festival in Belleville. It's been going for quite a few years. There was different steel players, but I got asked a few years ago and been getting repeat every year. It's in July. So they have the house band, and we usually do 3 or 4 guests on a Friday night and then Saturday night again, three or four different ones.
So it's similar to the barn dance where you've got different people that you're backing up all the time?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
The only difference here, there's sort of 45 minutes to 1 hour sets for each person.
Okay.
I think there might only be 3 or 4, but it's been a lot of good people. George Fox was there.
Oh, really?
Him up and a lot of big names. Some of them bring their own band members and might use only parts. Like George Fox, I played with him, but he brought his keyboard player. He was kind of leading things, but we had a list of their songs ahead of time. 2019 was Tia Goins, who I just love her singing. She's a traditional vocalist. A lot of good 4-4 shuffles and stuff like that. Really sings. If you Google her or go on YouTube, you'll find. And she loves steel players and has had Mike Johnson, who's one of the best, play on all her stuff. So I really spent a lot of time learning her stuff. And you could tell she appreciated it. I've got a picture of her going like this.
Okay.
You know, like, she just really enjoyed it, and she was a pleasure to work with.
Yeah.
And so it's that opportunity. Again, you go in, you rehearse all on your own, but never do it as a band. You know, we didn't have a keyboard, so if it was a piano intro, okay, who's going to do it? And you just kind of look at each other.
Yeah, for sure.
I got it, or, you know.
Yeah,
awesome. Somehow it all works out, but it's fun. But again, it's the caliber of musician I get to work with and enjoy that.
Okay. So here's Doug Dietrich accompanying Tia Goins singing the Ray Price song, A Way to Survive. And this was done at the Hollyrood Country Jamboree in Corbyville, Ontario, July 2019.
Now, anyway, but this is a Ray Price song that I'm doing, and it's one of my favorites, and it's called A Way to Survive. I look at your picture too often. But for me, it's the way to survive. I must cling to what's gone and to go on. I can't face the future. I've tried. Perhaps for the rest. Looking back is best, but for me, it's the way to survive. Thank you.
mentioned it yet, but out at Maryhill, we certainly talked about that, and we've done a thing a few times out there. We call it the Men of Steel.
Okay.
I suggested that after the first time. I said, Paul, it might sound like you got a bunch of male strippers or something, but let's call this the Men of Steel.
Yeah.
And okay. So that's what it became known as. And we had five different steel players.
Really?
At the same time.
Okay.
People say, well, you just take turns going up. No, no, we all go up at once.
Wow.
We had Mike Weber, Paul's.
So you had them all lined up in front of the rail?
Yeah, three and two, like we had extra stage, whatever. Two and three, I guess it was.
Yep.
But yeah, we had Doug Johnson, Ed Ringwald, Dale Rivard, Mike Weber, and myself. And we've had Steve Smith one other time. And I think I'm forgetting somebody.
Okay.
Generally, that's what it is. And Paul would play bass. Grant played drums one time. Peter Zettel, Charlie St. Dennis. We had different drummers. And Dan Howlett from WSA play fiddle. We did, naturally, a lot of steel instrumentals. But people say, well, just one at a time. No, he'd play his part there, just go right around.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we'd throw the fiddle in between sometimes for a little variety. And then we did a lot of vocals. Because steel, you know, for country stuff, that's really what a lot of guys play more than instrumentals. Because true steel instrumentals, other than steel guitar rag, people really don't know the steel instrumentals. So I found you're better to play, well, lots of backup, obviously, or play a song that they know where somebody normally sing it and just play it instrumentally. Because then they, oh, I like that song.
Yeah, for sure.
That works. So we did a lot of that. But Paul sang, and Paul knows more songs than anybody I know.
That would draw people from really far away, too. Like, did you promote it to...
Yeah, we had pretty good crowds.
I bet.
Yeah, pretty good crowds. A lot of other steel players and musicians came. And we'd get some guests up there, but it was pretty neat. You couldn't do that with just anybody. Even other instruments. Somebody said, oh, only steel guitar players could do that. Because you put five lead guitar players up there, they'll fight over it. Which, I don't believe that. If you get the right guy, anybody could fight over the breaks.
Yep.
But we're not trying to outdo each other. You know, they're all... I was the only one of the group that was not at one point in time a full-time player. They were all full-time musicians.
Yeah. Well, like Ed, you mentioned Ed Ringwald. Yeah. I think he was... Wasn't he Gordon Lightfoot's...
16 years, WSA now. When I was first playing young, probably 15-ish, 15, 16, maybe that area, Pee-wee's a little younger than me. Pee-wee's Ed, in case you know the name. His father brought him to my dad's house to hear me play, and he was just learning. Then he went to Dallas, Texas, and studied there for a year or something.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that story.
Maurice Anderson, and he came back, and he clicked. He got the Ronnie Proffitt TV show, and Ian and Sylvia. He got some good gigs, and then from that he went to Lightfoot. Amazing.
Why don't we talk about your wife, even working full-time, and then running off to gigs at night? Away on weekends and stuff, so.
Yeah. The interesting thing, though, with my wife, I met her at the Elora Village Inn. Her parents were there coming to hear the band when we were playing there, like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Okay.
The next time we played there, she came along, and we've been sort of together ever since, as it turned out.
Yeah.
She's been extremely supportive for me.
Okay.
Encouraging me to play. And we got married in 74, so it's been 46 years. I've been playing all that time. She doesn't know me any different than that. I've seen so many bands break up because husband couldn't keep playing or his marriage would break up. Either the band or the marriage broke up in many cases.
Sure. Yeah.
No, I didn't have those problems, so I count my blessings that way.
Yeah.
But she'll turn that around a bit, too, and say, because I worked sort of day and night for at times, she didn't have to work, so she was able to raise the family. She's thankful for that, which I, looking back, really appreciate, especially because... there's a lot of times I was gone six nights a week or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Or gone on a tour for... I've never been gone very long. Maybe 2 weeks at a time was the longest. Didn't travel like some of the... Mostly I was able to come home from the jobs. Still, I was gone, and she did a lot with the kids. And
good for
so
you.
I'm thankful there. And, you know, I showed you a portrait that... She gave me a great surprise birthday party at Maryhill. Sunday afternoon, Paul invited me out for a barbecue, and we went upstairs. He lives upstairs there. And he kept going downstairs and said, oh, my daughter Becky's got some demonstration, not Tupperware, but something like that. And I just want to see if things are okay. Because I could tell there was something going on downstairs.
Yeah.
So sure enough, later, next time he said, come on down with me. So go down and surprise. And the room was full and there was a band playing.
Oh, really?
Pee-wee was there. Ed was there, as I said, Pee-wee. Doug Johnson was set up
as
steel.
A whole bunch of steel players, huh?
And Mike Weber had two steels on stage and a whole bunch of musician friends.
Yeah.
I got up and played for a while later on, but it was just great. So many friends.
Yeah.
And that's when she had commissioned, so to speak, Lance Rushworm to do a portrait of me.
Yeah.
He used a picture. and I think it was a picture when I was playing Maryhill, actually.
Oh, okay.
And he painted this, and he did a great job. And so that was one of the things he did. Then that's another great birthday, she got Butch Shelder to make a replica of a steel guitar, made it into a table, put a glass top on it. So that's sitting in her record room, too.
That's nice.
It's great. Just a way that she's encouraging. She always says, I'll never quit. Pandemics make me wonder if I'm going to be quitting or not, or forced into retirement. But she says, oh, you'll be doing it as long as you can live. She says, you probably have to put wheels on your steel and make a walker out of it, and, and you'll get to the job still.
Yeah, I think music's almost a drug for me. I need to keep playing. So.
Yeah.
I'll get lost in the mood. New York City plays sweet country music like they do back home in Tennessee. Walked into a bar down on 12th Street and Vine, looking for a place to pass the time. Outside the door is a cold, cold city, and neon lights flashing everywhere. Hey, bartender, bring a pitcher of beer. I think I'll get lost in the mood.
Well, thanks a lot for letting me interview you for Musicians FAQ. This has been great.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Hope I didn't talk too much.
No, it's been awesome. I learned a lot.
Oh,